ladies and gentlemen, and people of all genders, welcome to what may be the final, tentatively final episode of Nerdy Notions. I'm Sasha Kaplan. I'm joined by my amazing friend,
Kat. Hey there, everyone.
And although we are going to get into Spider-Man Brand New Day, although we kind of forgot about No Way Home, I realize, after we recorded, Far From Home, after we recorded No Way Home.
The naming of these movies is not confusing at all, guys.
I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Spider-Man Homecoming, there's an actual homecoming dance. And he comes home from, like, a trip to DC and a trip from doing Avenger shenanigans, right? No Way Home. No, Far From Home is him being far from home. He's in Europe. And No Way Home is ultimately spell shenanigans and the fact that there is no way back to life before.
Yeah, it technically does all make sense. That being said, if you asked me to put these movies in order, I would not be able to most of the time.
Yeah, it is a little confusing, but you know what? We're going to get through it. And then we're going to take a, kind of an extended hiatus to focus on some other stuff. I have a bunch of stuff in the pipeline. Kat has quite a busy year ahead of them.
Yes, I do. And then we are also going to be working on another one of our podcasts called The Midwife Podcast, if you've ever seen that show. So that's also going to be a lovely time.
That's going to be filled with a lot more emotions, equal amounts of sarcasm, and a lot more history. So stay tuned for more news about that on my social media, because somebody...
Look, social media is bad and it's been corrupting our souls, so...
Okay, but marketing.
Yes, marketing is important. I will not argue that. But that being said, if I can avoid it for as long as possible, I will.
You're at the point where you can no longer avoid it. I'm not marketing this by myself. All right. Our debates over social media aside, we are talking about what is seemingly being going to be the third highest grossing movie of all time, Spider-Man Brand New Day.
Which kind of makes sense. People love, like, just as a concept, people love Spider-Man. Spider-Man, I think, has been one of the most popular superheroes since he was created. Peter Parker is an incredibly relatable character in a lot of ways. His story is fantastic, regardless of how you really interpret it. And frankly, after the dullness of the Marvel movies recently, though they have been getting better, this was a breath of fresh air.
I mean, Thunderbolts was actually pretty good.
Thunderbolts was pretty good at... Again, it's going into a path of what I like what the MCU is doing is where they're changing the endings up a bit, so it's not always this giant fight with the big bad villain. Mm-hmm. And that's also kind of what happens here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, Thunderbolts is probably the point where they started really increasing in quality, because you got Thunderbolts, then Fantastic Four, and now this is probably the best one out of the three.
Definitely, definitely. So this movie, how do we do before? Oh, this is very important. This is not a spoiler-free review. There will be spoilers galore. If you have not seen this movie, turn off this episode, go to the movie theater, and come back. We'll see you in 3 hours. Okay, great. So you're ready now. This movie is kind of an emotional trip in many ways.
I think for a lot of folks, but especially for our poor Peter here, who goes through the ringer emotionally, because this is a direct sequel from the last Spider-Man movie. It picks up almost immediately from where that one ends. So this movie starts with, like, essentially a time skip, where we watch a montage of Peter going through the last 4 years with MJ and Ned at MIT. He watches how they're doing through social media. Meanwhile, he's being the best Spider-Man that he can and is now beloved by New York City.
I mean, J. Jonah Jameson's podcast has seemingly ended, and so he's not there to stir up the hatred against Spider-Man. But there's something important that you said here. He's... Essentially, Peter Parker sort of is gone, not just in terms of, like, everybody's memory of him, but in terms of Peter himself. He is Spider-Man. His entire life is about being Spider-Man at this point. And he's working with Detective Jean DeWolf, who is a character from the comics. And he's also visiting his aunt, May's grave. We know he's also working with Frank. He's also worked with Frank Castle, aka the Punisher.
Yes, the Punisher is now officially. I know, like, the show is canon in MCU land, but now he's officially in the MCU movies.
He had a Disney Plus special too.
Did he?
He did.
Oh, I completely blitzed that from my brain. The Punisher's not my favorite character.
He's an acquired taste.
And that's what everybody says about Frank Castle.
So walk us through a little bit of kind of that emotional impact of the kind of Peter Parker that we're seeing here.
So we're seeing a very, I won't say down on his luck Peter Parker, but it's clearly like he's trying to bury all of his emotions and just really embrace being Spider-Man. Like, he doesn't connect with people. He's just pushing it all down because he's essentially lost everybody he's ever loved. And this makes him sort of a recluse. His spider powers are starting to get all out of whack. And he's really, like, out of touch, like, with his emotional core, in a sense.
Yeah, Peter has essentially no friends, no social life, and the only person we see him talking to is Detective Wolf, who even points out, like, do you even know the names of my kids? Like, all we do is talk about work. And Peter just is kind of disappearing in on himself, which leads to the emotional impact of his powers going haywire, which is actually very on the flip side for what we saw in previous Spider-Man films, right? Because there is in Spider-Man 2 where Peter loses his powers for a bit.
Yes.
And he goes through an existential crisis. But in this case, this Peter Parker is not losing his powers. Essentially, he's becoming more spider-like.
Yeah, so we finally get the biowebs again that we haven't had since Spider-Man 3, or I guess, like, the last Spider-Man movie, technically.
Well, the first Spider-Man trilogy, technically, because Toby was the only one that had the biowebs.
So now we have the biowebs back. His sensory, like, the Spidey sense is now dialed up to 11, to the point where, like, he gets overwhelmed really easily. Like, his powers are going crazy, his strength is improving, his reflexes, but he also can't control it, so he has these emotional outbursts where he ends up accidentally hurting a police officer, doing property destruction, and the villain also ends up really feeding into this later on, and we'll talk a little bit about who the villain is and what all that implies.
Yeah, so we're getting Peter, he's helping the cops, and he's trying to help the cops with a specific situation wherein, was it, somebody tries to break into the Department of Damage Control with a tank.
Yeah, so, yeah, basically that's the main villain. They have the ability to take people over and then make them do things, and then when they release their control, the person no longer remembers what they did or how it happened and whatever. So this villain, and I'll save their name for when it's actually revealed in the movie, takes over this old woman janitor, essentially, and has her drive a tank into the Department of Damage Control to release Scorpion, because Scorpion's in this movie.
That really, really important A-list villain, guys.
We all remember Scorpion, right?
I mean, I do, but I grew up on the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Look, he's up there with Green Goblin. I don't know what you're talking about.
Said no one ever. But no, like, the Scorpion's kind of a fun villain, and his suit does look really cool. I wish we could have seen it a little bit more in the daylight. Because, man, that, like, scorpion tail was so well done. But, yeah, so Peter goes to try to get some information about, you know, whoever this person is that's, like, possessing people and doing something called body hopping. And he goes to a Russian bathhouse.
Oh, yeah. Black Widow is also in this movie.
And the gist that she gives Peter is essentially there's, like, small potatoes things and there's big potato things. And the small potatoes is, like, you know, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man stuff. And, like, helping the cops. And I guess big potato stuff is gonna be Doomsday. I'm just trying to think of, like, somebody did point out, like, where were the Thunderbolts? Or, sorry, the New Avengers? When there's, like, people randomly body hopping, but I guess, like, Peter didn't really have time to notify anybody.
I guess, this is such a weird thing. This is one, probably my only, and this is such a nitpick thing, but this is probably my biggest thing with this movie, is that Peter also does big potato things. So I know, like, everyone forgot that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, but it's not like they forgot that Spider-Man existed. Spider-Man still fought Thanos. Like, he went to space. He did a lot of that stuff.
He was also technically a child when he did that.
Yes, but then, like, he was part of the original Avengers crew, technically.
Sort of. Fair enough. It is interesting, though, that, like, Elena's office is just, like, the one of the pools in the bathhouse, and Peter actually, like, has to get undressed, but keeps his mask on, or tries to anyway. And it's just like, yep, this is exactly how Peter Parker, aka Spider-Man, operates. And there's a lot, bunch of instances of this in the movie where, like, he won't even take his mask off to eat, and they make a joke about that in the movie as well. So that to me was a nod to many different kinds of comics. But man, Peter Lee's, like, really helping clean up the city. He fought the Hand, who's somehow been rehabilitated, and that's not totally not suspicious at all.
We're not going to look too deeply into that one, guys.
But yeah, Peter's, like, being really friendly. So Elena informs Peter that there's a lot of the different damage control facilities have been attacked, and whoever it is attacking is looking for something called VMAX. And the director, who tells him he doesn't know what VMAX is, and we're kind of meant to believe he's lying, but as it turns out, he actually wasn't lying. He definitely didn't have any idea what that was.
No. Like, the director is basically, he's what you think he is. He's the very stereotypical, I'm the director of Department of Damage Control, so you're not going to be surprised when he turns out to be a villain. Like, if you are surprised, go watch more movies. I'm sorry.
And it's interesting, there's like a little bit of a Winter Soldier parallel here, if you think about it, because as it turns out, Damage Control is doing shady things. S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing shady things. Peter goes to Yelena for help. Cap had Natasha for help. And obviously it's not like a tit for tat comparison, but there are some elements that kind of resonate with me. But yeah, director Metzger was suspicious from the get-go. Meanwhile, Ned and MJ have graduated from MIT now, and they've returned to New York, and Peter ends up going to a party, kind of coincidentally, because he happens to be at this little bodega, and he runs into Ned, who's not supposed to be drinking some energy drinks, and he ends up going up to this party. He sees, you know, MJ. He has this moment with Ned, who's trying to, apparently Ned invented the spider tracking app and has a very ridiculous theory about who Spider-Man is, which is he was either, Flash Thompson?
Yeah.
Or one of their teachers. I'm curious, this is one of the things that the movie doesn't answer, which is, like, Flash Thompson wrote a book about being Spider-Man's best friend. So did he just, like, not name drop Peter in the book?
No, I think the book just disappeared. Like, there's no other way that that can work.
But does, like, Peter still have documentation?
The only thing I can possibly think of is that, one, everyone thought that that book was a lie or made up, or two, he only published, like, 3 copies and nobody bought it.
No, for sure.
So, because, like, there's a lot, like, if you think about too deeply about how this spell works, this movie just does not function, frankly, like, the entire concept does not work. So you do have to, like, go in with some suspension of disbelief, because otherwise it's like, hey, where's Flash Thompson's book? Did they erase Peter Parker from all the yearbooks? Like, did his birth certificate vanish off the face of the planet? Like, did it, like, all go into a hole? Like,
I wonder if it's just a case of memory where, like, okay, yeah, he's kind of... So everybody who knew Peter Parker is pretty much exclusively in New York. So it could be a case of, like, he essentially got erased from New York. But given how New York works, he still would have needed, like, proof of income or some kind of documentation to be able to rent an apartment. Even though it seems like it was kind of sketchy circumstances of how he got the apartment. But you know what? We're not here to question how the world works. There's some bazillion questions that the comics don't even answer about the basic functionality of society. Plus, I would imagine with the amount of times that New York has been attacked, rent is probably not as expensive as it is in IRL New York.
Probably not. I can't imagine the insurance you would need to pay out on to even rent an apartment. Also, Louis won't think about what Peter's actual job is so that he even has money for rent, because the movie never brings that up either.
I mean, I could see him doing some, like, tech or things on the side, because he's a very smart, and he has this whole cool setup, and that all costs money. And, like, we don't need to dwell too much on it, because that's not the point of the movie. I just kind of assumed that he used his tech in some way to earn him money. I mean, these days, I mean, the kid's a genius, and he lives at home. Like, he technically works from home. So there's an endless amount of things he could be doing to earn income.
Yeah, if you think about it too deeply, this movie falls apart, which is why we're not going to do that, because we have other parts of this movie to talk about, because guess who else is here? Bruce Banner.
Oh, that's right. My favorite character ever. Bruce Banner, a.k.a. Professor Hulk, a.k.a. the Hulk, a.k.a.
So,
oh, that's right, he's in this movie.
Yeah, basically, because Spider-Man's powers are all out of whack, he goes to see Bruce Banner, who's teaching at...
Empire State University. Okay. They actually named it.
Okay, good. You actually remember the college. I did not.
Because it's the same one that Peter goes to in the comics.
Oh, okay, that works. So, basically, he goes to Bruce Banner, and he's like, hey, how does your inhibitor work? And then they science talk at each other to get an answer so that Peter can create his own inhibitor for his own powers so he can stop almost killing cops.
And I believe, as biochemical and biomedical engineers have already pointed out, that is not how science works. But you know what? This is a comic book world where there's magic and aliens and jump portals. And you'd think after there'd be more space travel from, like, governments, but apparently it's just Nick Fury's satellite in the sky. I just rewatched The Marvels, so that is on my brain.
Oh.
It actually wasn't that bad. But we're not here to talk about that. So Peter makes the inhibitor, and he's kind of working on it, and he seemingly got it. And he makes... But throughout all of this, he also starts talking to this mysterious person that is jumping into people. And this person threatens MJ to the point where Peter actually has to go and save MJ and get her away from all of this.
Yeah, Ned did the really dumb... I remember this point in the movie, and I thought this was so incredibly dumb. Ned posts their address on social media, and that's how the telepath was able to find them.
Did he really?
Yes, that happens in this movie.
Oh, I missed that completely. I just assumed she got it from...
No, there was this line where it's like, the roommate posted their address on social media.
Oh, Ned. Oh, bless your heart.
Ned is barely in this movie, by the way, so if you were excited for Ned content, you're not getting it here. He's like in 3 scenes max.
I will say I really like the actor who plays Ned, but I always found Ned to be a little unnecessary at times. So I don't necessarily miss him in this movie, but anyway, so Peter manages to get MJ, and this scene is probably my favorite in the entire movie, because so Peter and MJ have this conversation, or Peter and Spider-Man, they kiss, and then it turns out that Peter did not actually kiss MJ. He kissed MJ's body, who was in control of someone else.
Yes, and then...
The look of betrayal on his face was so heartbreaking.
We'll come back to this scene later, because this is the scene that bothers me so much when it comes to how they treat the villain by the end of the movie. And I'll connect the two dots slightly later when we talk about the ending. But this scene, it goes into a lot, like, MJ does not remember this at all. When you are possessed, you have no memory of anything that you're doing or anything that is happening. And MJ's body is essentially used to kiss Peter Parker. And then she's essentially thrown off a building.
Peter saves her. It's fine.
And Peter saves her. Like, for, I will be honest, for one brief second, I'm like, are they about to do the Gwen Stacy thing?
Oh, I knew they weren't going to do that. I knew that wasn't happening. But see, I did see the parallel, and I was like, oh, make sure you're webbing her correctly. And he does.
Because he watched Andrew Garfield Spider-Man do it from the last movie. At least that's my headcanon.
I'm sure Peter had a conversation. I mean, they do have a conversation last movie about, like, losing loved ones. But, yeah.
But this is a heinous act. Peter is heartbroken. He's like, he's almost thinking, like, this is almost unforgivable. And then he rescues MJ. And then we finally really, at this point, learn the identity of this person. And it's Jean Grey.
Shocker! The fanboys and rumors and leaks and red carpet people were correct.
Whoa.
It's not a out of character introduction for Jean Grey, I'm going to be very honest. It's a little bit more public than the shenanigans that happen in the comics that led, but Jean Grey is our bad guy. Meanwhile, Peter takes MJ to Frank.
Yeah.
And just like there was a, you know, this looks just, this reminds me of Budapest. Now we have a, I saved your butt on Long Island.
Yeah, so that will hopefully not come back again, but, and be ruined.
I hope not. I think it's, I'm one of the people that, like, I kind of love that the MCU throws out these random things to show us that the world is bigger than what we see it is. I don't need to know what happened. I think the things I have imagined in my head are going to be way funnier than anything the MCU can offer.
So yeah, he takes MJ to Castle's hideout. He agrees to hide her. And at this point, because he has bomb-making equipment, Peter is able to create his own inhibitor with MJ's help, plus a universal inhibitor for Jean, because she's still the bad guy at this point.
And she's about to do damage to the Department of Damage Control.
Right, so at this point, I know we're jumping all over the place, but this movie kind of also jumps all over the place. Peter goes to Damage Control's headquarters in order to talk to the director to learn what's going on. And then Bruce Banner shows up. Because Jean Grey has decided to possess him, of all people. Because this is such a good idea.
I mean, from her perspective, it actually is. If she's in control of Bruce / Hulk, Hulk can destroy what she needs him to destroy. Now, if I'm Jean and I have to break into the Department of Damage Control, I mean, so Jean has mastered the art of telepathy and jumping into people's bodies. She has not, or the mental power, she has not mastered the physical aspects of those powers, which is moving objects with her mind.
Yeah, because that would have actually solved like half her problems in this movie if she could do that.
But I kind of like the fact that ultimately, as Peter figures out, and also there should be a really cool note here. When Jean is jumping from people to people, there's a specific range that she has. And the choreography of how this was done in the film, there's already been some behind the scenes footage released from that, is incredible. So much attention to detail went into those sequences. And there's like two or three of them in the movie. It's really well done.
Oh, that part is. Like, the action sequences of this movie are fantastic. Like, the way Spider-Man swings around, you feel the movement. You feel like him rushing through the city. It is like, again, MCU has always been on point with its action scenes. It continues to be on point here with its action.
And the cinematography as well, the different angles, the way that at times it kind of felt like I was playing a Spider-Man video game, actually.
Oh, absolutely. So, and then this is another one of their best action sequences, because you end up with Frank Castle, Hulk, Spider-Man, and Jean Grey all fighting in this headquarters.
Yeah, and there's some really great moments where Peter's, like, trying to help Banner and trying to, like, not get, like, he's trying to contain the damage as best he can. But all of the fight scenes in this movie were just incredible, especially the one that we're going to get to towards the end of the film, I think is my favorite.
Oh.
Because just the way that the choreography worked. The way they played around with angles and the way it's filmed is just absolutely incredible. You know, I know the Oscars really dislike superhero movies, but the cinematography in this movie, to me, is very much Oscar worthy, even though I'm pretty sure The Odyssey is going to sweep everything.
I'm almost assured that it is. So, to basically, Peter's able to defeat the Hulk even after his inhibitor is destroyed and Jean loses the powers to control him. He turns into the Savage Hulk. He almost annihilates New York again. And so he's able to defeat him. He defeats Frank Castle, who's being possessed by Jean Grey, and then he puts the universal inhibitor on Jean so that she can be captured by Damage Control. So she's captured by Damage Control and then taken to their facility on Roosevelt Island. All of this is fun and good. So when all that happens, I believe he ends up going back to MJ and Ned as Spider-Man and having a conversation with them. He admits to MJ, is like, hey, while you were possessed, I ended up kissing you, and it's an apology scene, and she acts kind of
She's like, well, I don't remember it, so
I'm like, which is like so weird, but whatever. That's not how a real person would react, but sure.
I mean, people could react in many different ways. I don't think there's one set of circumstances. It really depends on what the action was. In this case, it was just, it was a kiss. And MJ, like, I think she just, like, doesn't understand. Like, she doesn't have anything to, like, it all kind of happens very instantaneously. And so I think, you know, she's still kind of processing everything that has happened. Because this has been a very crazy day for her.
Like, I guess, yes, that is true. Like, she's just learned that this stranger is in love with her that she has never met. She just got back from Frank Castle's hideout and hanging out with him. She doesn't tell her boyfriend anything. By the way, she has a new boyfriend.
Which we see only in one scene. But there is something important that happens is when they're on the ship, Peter comes back to as Spider-Man to bring MJ back home because it's like safe now because Jean's been arrested, and MJ has the letter that Peter was going to read to her at the end of No Way Home. Yep, got it right this time. And she asks him to explain this, and he does, and she's like, no, I want to see your face. And so she sees his face and she's like, I don't know you, and I just found out you're in love with me. And it's so incredibly heartbreaking, and I feel for Peter so much here. Like, you just want to wrap him in a blanket and give him a hug.
Oh, Peter needs all the hugs after this movie. So, like, all of them. So he meets Ned again, and Ned's like, wow, how do you know Spider-Man? Because he's still wearing the Spider-Man costume after all this time. And he and Ned start bonding again, acting like the best friends that they always were. MJ is drawing them on the couch. It's a very old school scene that we've seen in all the other previous Spider-Man movies. But what's really pulls out of this scene is that he learns that MJ did not remember anything while being possessed by Jean. And this is important because the director claimed to have been possessed by Jean. And he gave Peter information that leads Peter to believe, or truly, that the director lied to him.
So what happened was Jean, after the inhibitor is on and she's being loaded into an ambulance, she says, Sarah. Peter asks the director, and the director's like, oh, she must have heard it from my brain. Sarah was somebody that I knew that passed away. And I remember thinking about her right before Jean possessed me, or something along those lines. And yeah, so Peter essentially realizes the director lied. What's also really interesting, and the internet pointed this out, the sketch that MJ makes is, has a hint at Peter's original costume.
Mm.
So I don't know if that's just meant to be an Easter egg, if that could mean there's a chance she could regain her memories. I doubt that, but you know, there is, it does leave the door open for a chance of some kind of rebuilding, maybe one day. But yeah, so Peter now realizes, hey, the director kind of lied to me. What do I do with this information? And the answer is, well, we got to figure out more information.
So he goes to infiltrate the damage control facility on Roosevelt Island to rescue Jean because he's been misled. Jean is basically being kidnapped and held hostage. And the director starts experimenting on Jean in order to see how her powers work so that he can transfer them to other people. I think the way that he phrases this is that, imagine this power if it was not in the hands of a child.
Well, you don't get to pick the powers or lack of powers that you get. And so essentially Jean realizes that the room that she's being held in is the same room that her sister had been held in, presumably for, we don't know the exact timeline here.
So VMAX is the weathered label on the air vent in her cell, and she notices when she looks up and sees the word VMAX. And this was the last image her sister sent her before her sister died.
So at the very least, the director didn't lie about not knowing what the heck VMAX is. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, this is such a lame twist. Like, no, this is actually a horrific twist.
Yeah.
It means that in her last attempt to communicate with her sister, Sarah was so far gone that the only thing she was able to project was the last thing she saw as she was tortured to death.
So enraged, Jean essentially creates the psionic field, or like this mental field that extends beyond this facility and freezing everyone except for Peter. Now,
Frank.
And well,
Frank is on the outskirts.
Frank is on the outskirts. That becomes important later. One thing we forgot to mention: Peter, in this movie, was immune to her powers.
Yes.
They never explained why. My guess would have been something to do with Doctor Strange's spell.
Or just the fact that Spidey sense.
I guess. Again, they never actually deliberately explain why he's immune. He just is. Roll with it. So this leads into the best action sequence of the film, where he has to fight the hand who's being possessed by Jean.
Also, something that... So Peter has a little AI companion friend thing, and one thing that he realizes as he's doing his research and she's analyzing his biology to figure out what's wrong with him is that Peter has been too long in isolation. So spider, I don't know if there's some spider logic here. I'm not an arachnid expert and I don't want to be. But the gist of it is that Peter needs people, which is like, duh, but this is a very difficult concept for Peter Parker to grasp. So by spending time with Michelle, MJ, I apologize, I keep calling her Mary Jane. By spending time with Ned and sort of remembering the quote-unquote good old days, even though they don't, that re-empowers Peter to be able to take control of his additional new powers. And so then you get this really epic fight in the prison. And it's just so good how he fights the hand, the tricks with the web, the way the camera's following him. And again, the way that this was filmed was also incredibly cool. So really, really props to the director, props to the camera team, props to the choreographers that planned out all of these incredible fight scenes.
Like, it's really just worth going to see this movie in like the best you can find, quality you can find for this scene. Because it is so well done. And it holds you, because during this fight, like, Peter embraces his powers, or like the extension of his spider powers, and the difference in his fighting style like switches, and it's so good.
Yeah, so ultimately Peter stops MJ, Jean Grey, oh my god. Peter stops Jean from murdering the director, even though
he kind of deserves it.
But Frank, meanwhile, isn't really sure what's going on, but he's got a slick little sniper rifle.
So, Spike, I don't know if he lets Jean Grey possess him, or she just now has the power to possess him, but Jean possesses Spider-Man, and she goes into his memories, and she steps into a conversation.
He gives her permission.
Okay, perfect. She steps into it and watches a conversation that he had with Aunt May. And this is a beautiful scene. It's incredibly emotional. It's, again, watch this scene. It is tear-jerking. It goes into the heart of what's been bothering Jean and all of this.
What's also really cool is the part of Aunt May does appear a couple of other times from Peter's perspective. Aunt May sort of becomes like, I don't know if you can call her like a grounding force that brings him back to reality or not, mm-hmm. but she does provide help, and that's ultimately foreshadowing the advice that she gave Peter to now give that same advice to Jean.
So during this thing, like, him and Jean bond, he tells Jean, hey, I'm here for you now, you got me. At the same time, Frank has no idea what's going on, so he shoots Jean, or attempts to.
And Peter saves Jean's life. And Peter sustains a critical injury. Now, for everybody who was complaining that this scene made no sense, and that how could Peter's like, do you guys know how fast that bullet was traveling? And the fact that this is Frank Castle, so he probably has some, like, as we know, things that can fight off a superhero.
Yeah.
So Peter surviving this, it makes sense. Peter getting seriously hurt by this also makes sense, because he doesn't have a Wolverine-level healing factor here.
So the thing is, and the reason why Peter survived, is that Jean kept him remotely alive the entire time. Otherwise, he would just be dead.
That's also true. We find that out a little bit later.
So Jean, after all this, Jean leaves the city. The director disappears. Of course, damage control comes under investigation. And, of course, Peter heals, gets out of the hospital, meets Frank Castle, is like, I'm your best friend now, buddy.
I mean, Frank is, in many ways, Frank is sort of like the worst parts of Batman, in the sense of, like, you know, post Jason Todd Batman is like really dark and violent Batman. That's Frank, but with guns. And so to see this kind of shift in Frank a little bit while he's also living in a Cold War era boat. You know, it was kind of fun. Like, Frank is still Frank Castle, the man who shoots first and asks questions later. But you can tell he's got a little bit of a soft spot for Spider-Man.
I like that Spider-Man's now just his version of Robin. It works.
I think he's Robin. He just doesn't know it.
To be fair, with how strong Peter is, that does make sense. So, all well that ends well, and Peter ends up running into Ned at this bodega, and as, you know, Peter Parker, and he introduces himself using their old handshake. And at the very end, it's almost like Ned recognizes Peter.
I think it's just a way, I don't know, I don't think they do for sure, because I don't know how you break that kind of spell, but it does suggest ultimately that there is some kind of muscle memory that does remember Peter. And so it kind of ends the movie on a hopeful note. And I really, God, this was a good movie.
It was a good movie. Go watch it. It is worth it, or wait for it to come out on Disney Plus. But it's one of the movies where it's worth seeing in theaters for how well done and how well made this movie is.
And honestly, those action sequences are just not going to look as good on a smaller screen. So if you can, go watch it on the big screen.
So how does this movie compare to all the other Spider-Man movies?
Oh gosh, this is so hard because I feel like I actually rewatched all of the Spider-Man movies the Tom Holland ones in anticipation, and Homecoming is okay because Peter's too green and far too desperate for Tony Stark's approval. Far From Home was pretty good no matter what. I think Jake Gyllenhaal was a great Mysterio. No Way Home had so much going on. And it's not necessarily a bad thing because you are dealing with a lot and it's very complicated. But this, I think what sets this movie apart ultimately is that it's not about Peter seeking somebody else's approval. It's not about Peter working with some Avenger. Frank is here, and so is Yelena, but they're in a much more supportive role where, like, when Nick Fury shows up in Far From Home and you have Mysterio, it's like, okay, this is kind of about Mysterio.
Yeah.
But this movie is not even about Spider-Man. This movie's about Peter Parker.
It's a much smaller story. And frankly, the MCU does best when it's smaller stories. As much as we all love the Infinity Saga and Endgame.
Yeah, like, not everything has to be a world-ending threat. Sometimes it can just be a New York threat or a personal threat or a personal crisis.
Like, give me the small potato stories. It is working well. And this was a great... This might be my favorite out of the Tom Holland movies. I mean, I still have a soft spot for No Way Home. I probably always will because
It's so good.
It is so good. And I love that movie. Like, these last two Spider-Man movies, the MCU knew exactly what they were doing. They knew exactly how to write Peter Parker. And I think the second you took him out of the Tony Stark shadow thing, infinitely better.
And what's interesting from what I understood here, and I'm always under the opinion that when you have the right actor, they understand the character in a way that helps enhance the story and the writing. And from what I understand, I did not do research, Tom Holland had quite a bit of input in this story, to the point where there were some significant rewrites. And I don't know ultimately how much of that version made it into the final film. I'm sure there were some notes from the studio and vice versa. But all that to say is this movie was so well done.
I think at the end of the day, I'm going to say this. I love Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. Like, the original trilogy holds a special place. But I think this is one of the few movies where they nailed both Peter and Spider-Man. Like, they got both correct. And that's sometimes not the case with the other movies where it's like, oh, they did Peter Parker well, but not Spider-Man. Or they did Spider-Man really well, but not Peter Parker. They struck the right chord and balance with this one. It just took us a bunch of movies to get here.
Definitely. And we don't know what this holds in terms of the future of Spider-Man films. There was another point that I kind of wanted to get your opinion on before we wrap up, which is somebody said that the state of the MCU and the success of this film in particular, and it being a Spider-Man movie, essentially guarantees that we will not see lesser known properties adapted anymore. Do you think that's true?
I don't. I think at some point we're going to keep going into the lesser known properties. We'll see what the MCU does. I think they are planning to do a reboot of some variety, shape, or form.
Soft reboot was the word that has been thrown around.
We'll see what happens with that. I mean, like, we've got the Eternals, guys. Like, we've gotten some weird things. And also, now that we have the X-Men in here, who knows what's going to happen? So, like, as Jean was a great villain choice for this movie, and say what you will about finally getting the X-Men in here officially, I think it's a good move. I mean, I wish they did more of the Inhuman stuff outside of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
but,
I'm good. Thanks.
But we're not going to get that anytime soon.
I mean, we did get that one ABC miniseries that is best left unsaid.
We're not going to talk about that one. The only problem I had with Jean as a villain is that the redemption she does is super quick, because they do kind of redeem her in the end, because it's like, oh, my sister was tortured and killed, and it's like, that's great. That doesn't necessarily excuse everything you've done beforehand, which was violating the consent and possession of a bunch of people.
I mean, most of those possessions were kind of minuscule, except for that one guy that she made step in front of a car.
Yeah, like, he's dead. The poor janitor who killed a bunch of people in the tank, like, and had no idea what was happening. The kiss on MJ and then throwing her off the building.
I will say this is not unsurprising for mutant characters. Now, I think Jean is a great example of this is what happens when you have great power and no concept of the responsibility you have. Huh? See what I did there?
Yes.
So it'll be very interesting. Also, based on the fact that I've been in New York a bazillion times and know pretty much all the ins and outs, it does kind of seem like she's either going up north towards, like, Connecticut, based on, like, the foliage that we see in the road, or she's going upstate. So we'll find out.
I'll be very interested to see what she does here, because for me, the redeeming aspect of this movie did not quite work. I think Jean has a lot to apologize for. I understand where she's coming from, but that doesn't necessarily justify her actions to me in this film.
That's fair, and I think that's very on par for quite a few mutants that start a journey doing some questionable things, but then, you know, Magneto, they end up ultimately making a change in a positive direction.
I'll see what they do with her. I am curious. I'm not writing it off right off the bat, but if they don't address this in future movies and the nature of her powers, and Professor X doesn't have a long sit-down conversation with her about, hey, we can't possess people using telekinetic powers, that is bad, I'm not going to necessarily be happy with how it is.
We shall see. A rumor has it. So at the timing of the recording of this episode, we have not, it has not been D23 time yet. So who knows? And I'm sure everybody will be asking me in the chance that certain characters' castings are revealed at D23, my opinion thereof. And we will come back maybe eventually to discuss those X-Men shenanigans. Obviously, you know, y'all can find me on Instagram and Threads at the Jewish Comics Queen, where I will probably be kvetching to some extent about my thoughts and opinions. But so far, based on the confirmed casting, which includes now Emma Frost has been cast and Kit Connor has been cast as Cyclops, I am not particularly worried. But then again, those are not the characters whose casting I particularly have a strong opinion on. So we shall see.
We'll see what they do. We got Doomsday coming up. We got Secret Wars coming up. We will find out what the MCU has planned. If you really want to go bother me on social media, you can find me on Tumblr as Flying Night Witch.
You heard it here, folks. Go to Tumblr right now for anyone who still uses Tumblr.
All five of us. It's okay. I know who you are.
There you go. So thank you everyone who has joined me for the better part of the last 6 years. Wow. On this Nerdy Notions journey. Obviously, a major thank you to Michael Lindenbaum, who was my co-host for many, many of those episodes, and who remains a incredible editor and producer for this show, and will probably remain a producer and editor for many, many other shows, including our next podcast, Call the Midwife. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will catch you at some point soon in the future anywhere.
Flying out.